Today's Monday, February 29th. Michael E. Sala is a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the political study of the key actors, institution, and processes associated with extraterrestrial life. Got back from San Diego. And what were you doing there?
I was interviewing a whistleblower who only recently has emerged, and his story is quite amazing. And what makes him very different is that he has really many documents, hundreds of documents that actually substantiate his testimony that in the 1940s he was working for the U.S. Navy as an intelligence agent and disseminating advanced aerospace technologies that the Navy was gaining from Nazi Germany through embedded spies, that the Navy had its operatives finding out what the Germans were doing with these advanced technologies, and that the Navy actually had found out what they were and was disseminating this to various advanced think tanks, corporations, and scientific institutions throughout the United States.
How old is he?
At the moment, he's 92. He's going to be turning 93 very shortly. So this is a man who has incredible experience, who lived through the Second World War. And incidentally, Jimmy, I mean, he actually was a witness to the Los Angeles air raid. So he actually saw that. He was living in Long Beach, California at the time, and basically witnessed what it was that had happened then during the air raid in 42.
You know, that is still one of the more incredible, you know, encounters that we have, you know, had. And the more that I look at that photograph on the cover of the LA Times, the more disturbed I am by it. It's an extraordinary event. And this is the crazy part. I don't know if you know this. A lot of people died, but they died like in car accidents, having heart attacks, you know, witnessing what was going on. It was an extraordinary event, and I don't know what's in that photograph, but it doesn't look like, I don't want to say weather balloon, but it doesn't look like some kind of blimp or observational platform or anything that the Navy would have had. We would have known about it, and it doesn't look like anything else conventional. It's a pretty disturbing photograph. Now, what was in his documents? And can you disclose some of that?
Well, his documents basically reveal his role in this Navy espionage program that they were running out of Nazi Germany. He was recruited into that program because he was essentially a child prodigy. He had this amazing memory and this attention for detail in ship design. And because of his abilities in building scaled models of Navy ships that were so accurate that the Navy used them in various demonstrations, because of that, he was recruited by Navy intelligence to basically sit in on the debriefings of these spies that were in Germany and were being flown back to the United States on a six-month rotation period to basically debrief what it was that they had witnessed while embedded within these top-secret German facilities. And based on the debriefings, Tompkins' job, William Tompkins is the name of this new whistleblower, his job was to put together an information package that would basically make it clear exactly what it was that the Nazis were designing. And he would then take these designs to various aerospace organizations, facilities in the United States at the time. So he went to the Caltech facility, which was at China Lake. He went to the Douglas Aircraft Corporation facility. He went to Lockheed. He went to MIT. He went to the Warminster Naval Center in Pennsylvania. He basically traveled wherever the Navy, the Army, or there were any advanced kind of aerospace program that were trying to develop an understanding of what the Nazis were doing, or develop an American response to that. He gave these debriefings based on what it was that he had seen, or what it was that the Navy spies had seen. And so his job was basically to just take these debriefing, these packages to these different places. And he had documents basically substantiating that that was indeed what he was doing at the time.
And there's a direct extraterrestrial connection here?
That's the kind of really amazing thing here, Jimmy, because what Tompkins reveals is that as early as 1941, the United States Navy and the other active military branches at the time were aware that Nazi Germany was working with a group of extraterrestrials called the Reptilians. That this was something that Tompkins says that the Navy spies were reporting. And this was something that I talked to him about during the interview in San Diego. We did a number of interviews. I was with Dr. Robert Wood, who was the editor of the book by Tompkins. And Tompkins went into more information about how the Navy spies learned about this. Basically, what he said was that even though the Navy spies didn't see the reptilians themselves, they said that the German scientists and military officers were saying that the Germans were being helped by a race of extraterrestrial visitors that looked like reptilians. So this was something that was common knowledge within the really advanced compartmentalized aerospace programs that Nazi Germany was conducting at the time, that was very separate from the kind of more conventional aircraft projects that were pursued as part of the kind of German war effort that was headed by Albert Speer, who was running the German armaments ministry. Albert Speer, in his he wrote several books about what it was that he witnessed, and he never talked about these advanced projects because he simply was not involved with them. These were run by the Nazi SS, and the Nazi SS, as he revealed, ran a separate technology and economic sector to the conventional German war armaments ministry. So Albert Speer basically said that there was a shadow government operating within Germany at the time, behind the more conventional war ministry and the projects that they were pursuing to equip Nazi Germany for the war effort. Right. There was a parallel program run by the SS.
Now, to be clear, so I'm understanding what you're saying here. He has documents that are dated 1941 that mention reptilians. Is am I understanding you correctly?
He doesn't have documents mentioning reptilians. What he has are documents confirming that he actually was working out of the Naval Air Station out of San Diego, that he had orders from the Department of the Navy. His mission orders involved him being a disseminator of advanced aerospace technologies, and he has these packages, evidence packages that basically shows that he was disseminating this technology to various aspects or various aerospace corporations and think tanks through the United States. So he doesn't have documents mentioning reptilians. He says that this is what he heard when he was sitting in the debriefings.
Oh,
because
gotcha.
because his job was to basically listen to the debriefings of the spies and draw accurate models of the craft that the spies had seen. He wasn't there to interpret their data. That was another level of analysis that the Navy would have done. But his job was to basically, you know, hear what the Navy spies were saying about the various craft that the Nazis were designing, and then basically relay that on to the aerospace industries. But he says that the Navy spies talked about where this information for building these advanced craft were coming from, and the Navy spies said that the sources within Nazi Germany were saying that it was coming from this extraterrestrial race, the reptilians.
That's incredible. And now, and his job was to remember and then to recreate these craft, and he drew them himself.
Exactly. That was his job, to basically ask the Navy spies, well, you know, what did the craft look like? You know, how was it shaped? Were there armaments on it? You know, did you notice a propulsion system somewhere? You know, was there any kind of navigation device? And as they answered these kinds of questions, he would put together a scaled diagram or illustration of what it was that they were describing. And then he would take that off to Caltech or off to MIT or off to Lockheed or Douglas Aircraft Corporation and have these different aerospace corporations basically look at the designs and then ask questions about what it was that they were seeing. So that was Tompkins' job.
What can you describe what were in some of these drawings?
Tompkins said that the Nazis had developed 30 different types of flying saucer craft. They ranged from kind of fighters to kind of surveillance to transports to craft whose job was to basically haul cargo and so forth. So this was a very sophisticated technology program that was hidden throughout occupied Germany and also in Antarctica and South America. That Tompkins, and this is why his testimony is so important, because he corroborates some of the things that Corey Good has said about the Germans having relocated the bulk of their advanced aerospace or flying saucer technologies out of Germany, even before the Second World War, into remote locations in Antarctica. What Tompkins says is that actually the reptilian extraterrestrials invited the Nazis to remote locations in Antarctica to go there and to build out some of the caverns that the reptilians had earlier used in Antarctica. So Tompkins' information really is eye-opening, because not only were the Nazis being helped in developing advanced aerospace technologies and flying saucers by these reptilians throughout the war, that the Nazis were also given specific locations in Antarctica to travel to, where they would find these underground caverns, and they would be able to use these as bases for basically developing their programs. And according to Tompkins, I mean, he said, he basically said that 7 million people were moved from Europe to these three bases in Antarctica throughout the Second World War era, which is an incredible number.
Well, now, and you have to relate that directly to Admiral Byrd, where, you know, his alleged quote, which I believe that he said, you know, that there were aircraft down there that could fly pole to pole, right? And what he saw was extraordinary. Is this verification of Byrd's statements, you know, and can Tompkins actually nail this? I mean, in the documents, I guess what I'm asking you, Michael, do you feel confident in what Tompkins is representing here about Antarctica and Operation High Jump and Bird to actually now have taken place? Because it's almost urban legend with us, you know, with you and I and our circle. But is this the concrete proof we've been looking for?
It's definitely very powerful evidence here, because you have the eyewitness testimony of someone who really was quite accomplished in the aerospace industry, someone with multiple documents, as I said, hundreds of documents that confirmed that he had very senior positions in various leading aerospace corporations, and that he was involved in various top secret programs. So this is something that Tompkins said that he learned about while he was working for Navy intelligence from 1941 to 45, about the Nazis having established bases in Antarctica. And then subsequent to that, when he began working with the various aerospace corporations, and the one that was very pertinent to the Admiral Byrd incident was when Tompkins was working with the Douglas Aircraft Corporation from 1950 up until 1963, that there were Navy admirals that were basically coming in and basically advising Tompkins' team, or the people that Tompkins was working with, on what it was that the Navy needed, and they were getting intelligence information about what had happened in Antarctica. And according to Tompkins, what had happened in Antarctica was that when Admiral Byrd's expedition went down there, as they approached the South Pole, as they approached Neuschwabenland, which is where the three Nazi Antarctic bases were located, in that kind of Queen Maud land, as they approached, there were two waves of flying saucers. According to Tompkins, there was a total of 30 flying saucer craft that flew out of the ocean. The first wave basically attacked the naval armada, and the second wave did the same roughly 24 hours later. And the combined result of that attack was that all of the Navy's aircraft were destroyed. Several of the ships, of the larger ships, the destroyers, were destroyed. Many of the smaller support ships were destroyed. And basically, the rest of the armada was really at the mercy of the flying saucers that had come out of Antarctica. But the Nazis had no interest in basically obliterating the Naval Expedition Task Force 68. What they wanted to do was basically give the U.S. Navy a very bloody nose, get them to turn back and return to Washington and basically say that whatever it was that was going on down there in Antarctica is not something that the current technologies of the United States enables them to in any way assert national security interests over that.
Does Tompkins, did he give you any indication about what's going on now currently in Antarctica?
He didn't talk about that currently. What he did say essentially is that while the reptilians were helping the Nazis both during the war and in Antarctica, another group of extraterrestrials, the Nordics, were helping the United States Navy in developing the Solar Warden program. So according to Tompkins, while he was at Douglas Aircraft Corporation from in the top secret advanced design, and he was in that section from 1951 to 1963. He says that there were three Nordic extraterrestrials that were embedded within the Douglas Aircraft bureaucracy who were helping Tompkins and other people in the advanced design develop the necessary space battle fleets that the Navy would need to eventually assert itself in our solar system. So basically what Tompkins was saying was that our planet was being pulled into an already ongoing galactic war between two groups of extraterrestrials, the reptilians and these Nordic extraterrestrials, and that the Nazis had chosen to work with the reptilians, and that the United States Navy, at least in the 1950s, was working with the Nordics, and we can suspect, we can conclude that probably it happened a lot earlier, even during the Second World War, that the British and the Americans and the Russians were being helped by Nordic extraterrestrials as well to be able to defeat the Nazis.
Is Tompkins, he's 92 years old, is he ready to go fully public as a whistleblower and bring his documents forward and start to speak directly on this?
Definitely. He wrote a book that was edited with Dr. Robert Wood that was published in December of 2015, so very recent. In there he has some of the documents that basically substantiate, you know, his claims of having worked with Navy intelligence at San Diego at the Naval Air Station San Diego in these debriefings. And yes, he's very ready to go public and to reveal to the world what is going on. Because essentially, Jimmy, he says that in the year 2001, which, as I mentioned, it's strange that this is the same year that Stephen Greer got his Disclosure Project press conference launched, and, you know, it was the year that I got drawn into this. He says that in 2001, he approached a four-star admiral by the name of Hugh Webster, who at the time was the executive director of the U.S. Navy League, and basically said, well, I want to spill the beans on what I experienced, and can I do it? And the Navy League is an organization that has been very heavily involved behind the scenes in these secret space programs. And that's something that he's going to discuss more in his second, the second volume of his autobiography. He has told me a little bit about that, but he basically will reveal documents concerning that in the second volume. But nevertheless, he was given the go-ahead in 2001 by this four-star admiral to reveal his story and to back it up with documents. And so he began working on his autobiography. In 2009, he met with Dr. Robert Wood, who is a very well-known researcher associated with the Majestic documents, also worked with the Douglas Aircraft Corporation at the same time, and many of the people that Tompkins described in his autobiography in terms of running this advanced design section within Douglas Aircraft Corporation that was basically working on these Navy spacecraft battle fleets. This was something that Dr. Robert Wood, he was familiar with those people, even though Wood was not actually part of that compartmentalized program. He was familiar with the people running it. And so when he heard Tompkins describe these people and what they did and their expertise, he was convinced that Tompkins was the real deal, that he really did experience the things that he was describing. And so he chose to help Tompkins. And so he became the editor of the book. And it came out in, as I said, December of last year. And both Tompkins and Wood are available to basically share what they know of the projects that were being conducted at the Douglas Aircraft Corporation.
Well, Robert Woods is, you know, his reputation is solid and great, and we all respect him. But what about, what was your opinion? What was, we've got 30 seconds here really quick, and then we'll pick it up after the break. What did you think about Tompkins' demeanor?
When I saw him, he was very straight. I mean, he just basically was talking about things that he directly experienced. He was recalling from memory key experiences that he had back in the 1940s and then with these different corporations during his long career. And it's ongoing. We're talking about him even now.
Let me jump in. We'll pick up. Michael, one of the things that that I have a genuine lack of trust in is, and I'm not referring directly to Tompkins at all, but what I mean is those famous deathbed confessions that have surfaced over, you know, the last few years. And I watch those, and I just look at the face, I look at the eyes, and the demeanor of what's going on. I'm like, you know what? I don't need this. And ufology and disclosure and everything that we're dealing with right now doesn't need this. And that's why it's so important for me, for Tompkins, because he's referencing things that nobody else has ever talked about before in the past. And I find that extraordinary. And he's got the documents to back it up. But more important to me is the way that he speaks and how he carries himself. And you feel pretty good about that.
I do. I mean, his body language was very clear. There wasn't any kind of fidgeting. He would make eye contact as he spoke. There wasn't kind of much movement of his hands indicating any kind of deception or anything like that. I mean, he was a man really just recalling his experiences and explaining the documents that he had in his possession. And, you know, he did a kind of a slideshow for myself and Dr. Wood, revealing his involvement in various programs that the Navy had put together to basically deal with the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon and his involvement in that. And basically, this is a man with vast experience who has been given the go-ahead to come forward and talk about this. And that was very interesting when I basically asked him, well, in 2001 he was given the go-ahead. So does that mean that he is part of a Navy-sanctioned disclosure initiative? He said, yes, that's exactly what it is that he is part of. And that began in 2001. And as I kind of briefly mentioned in the last segment, you know, that coincides with Greer's disclosure project. That's when I actually came on board as well.
Right.
And that the Navy is moving ahead on this, that they are really part of the disclosure wave. And people like Tompkins are coming forward, and that there are others also kind of waiting in the wings who are also kind of like ready to disclose their involvement and their documents. And that's the most important thing here, is because we've had a lot of whistleblowers over the years, but now with Tompkins, you have a lot of documents substantiating many of the things that he's claiming.
Now, what about the danger of disinfo and the chance that this could be, you know, a setup?
Well, you know, that's something you kind of have to develop a sixth sense for that.
Exactly.
Because that is something that, you know, I mean, even before I got involved in this whole kind of UFO extraterrestrial phenomenon, it was the same thing when I was doing human rights work in these conflict zones. You know, there was a lot of disinformation. The government officials would say everything is fine, nothing's happening, and there would be witnesses who were telling you these horrendous tales of abuse and maltreatment by government authorities. And so, you know, you have to develop a sixth sense, and, you know, for field work, you do that. That's part of the work. You know, who's telling the truth, who isn't. What really helps, though, is when you're able to kind of look at the documents, when you're able to kind of cross-reference the testimonies of these whistleblowers, And so, you know, Tompkins is the first forward to say these things about the Nazis being involved in these advanced aerospace technologies and that the Nazis had made contact with extraterrestrials. But he's certainly the first to support that with documents showing his involvement in that process, because he was involved in the process, because he was taking the results of these debriefings to aerospace companies in the United States to basically help them start their R&D programs on flying saucers.
Now, you, I'm sure that there was one of those documents as he was, you know, going over things with you and Wood, where you just went, holy crap, right? I know there was one. What was that document?
Well, it was a list of Navy officers that were involved in a program that the U.S. Navy had set up to basically expose Navy officials and their children to extraterrestrial contact. So the Navy was basically doing this, that they were training their people for this. So there's a list of documents of officers' names.
Say that again. That was a holy crap moment for me. Okay,
yes.
He had a list of names of Navy officers that were exposing their family to ET contact?
Exactly, that these Navy officers, commanders, captains, they were part of a Navy program to acclimate senior Navy officials to extraterrestrial contact, where they would meet with extraterrestrials, that their children were exposed to extraterrestrials in these classroom situations, so that these Navy officers and their children were prepared for the day when contact would become would go open. So Tompkins showed me this list of Navy officers, and there was, you know, their names, their addresses, their identification characteristics, and their how to get in touch with these people. So it was like, this was amazing, and so I have a copy of that. And this is something, obviously, that I just can't reveal because I'm going to have to contact these Navy officers and see if any of them are prepared to go on the record to say that they were part of this Navy program. So this is going to take a bit of follow-up work. But, you know, here we have lists of documents, I mean, lists of Navy officers that were involved. And, Tompkins shared that with Dr. Wood and I.
That's insane. Now, okay, I've got about 20 questions for you now. That's absolutely amazing. Are you saying that, did Tompkins know if in this classroom setting, the exposure, was it with an actual ET or was it like a picture? You know, I mean, I'm confused. Well, what was he suggesting?
It was both. It was basically using intelligence technologies basically information technologies to educate the officers and their children about extraterrestrials. So Tompkins described these holographic technologies that would provide kind of like very visually interactive experiences about human history, about key events, about the history of galactic civilizations. Basically, these information technologies were being used to educate the officers and their children. And there were also kind of less advanced technologies to just kind of give the basics, and also extraterrestrials would also be involved. So it was kind of like a tiered education program. Tompkins' involvement with this began in 1984 to 1999. It's going to be something that he covers in detail in the second volume of his autobiography, and he's working on that now. But basically, this is where these different information technologies were used, some of the more conventional technologies that we're familiar with in terms of like computers, that school kids would be involved with these, but others were much more sophisticated holographic technologies where people would have these kind of like interactive experiences.
And the list that you saw, did Tompkins suggest that this indoctrination actually did occur, that the program did actually happen, or was this a suggested program of interaction?
Oh, no, Tompkins actually helped set it up, because one of the things about Tompkins is that, and his first book is titled Selected by Extraterrestrials.
Right.
And basically what happened was that when he was working at Douglas Aircraft Corporation, at the Advanced Design Think Tank from 1951 up until 1963, he worked with these three extraterrestrials that were embedded within the Douglas Aircraft Corporation. They wouldn't reveal themselves openly to everyone, but to people like Tompkins, they did reveal themselves. And essentially, I think the best way to describe it is that they saw Tompkins as one of them, as kind of like a human who kind of like history, incarnational history, if you like. We would call it a starseed, that Tompkins was a starseed. But basically, Tompkins was viewed as one of them. So he could telepathically communicate with them as well as communicate with them on a daily basis, as you would with people in a kind of very intense work environment. And so they would give him information about the design of these fleets of spacecraft, because one of the things that Tompkins said was happening in the advanced aerospace technology sector was that with the space programs that were being developed at Douglas and by NASA and other and RAND and other kind of think tanks. There were anti-gravity technologies as well as rocket technologies that were being developed, and that both of these were subject to sabotage by reptilian spies or Nazis that were still working in that had infiltrated the U.S. military-industrial complex. But similarly, Nordic extraterrestrials had infiltrated the military-industrial complex and were basically helping people like Tompkins to prevent this kind of sabotage by reptilians or the Nazis that was going on. And so Tompkins was being helped by these extraterrestrials. And so by the time he finished his corporate career and retired, that was around 84, when he finished working with General Dynamics out of Crystal City. He was working with them from 1981 to 84. So then in 85, he moves over to Oregon and he begins working with the Navy League and basically sets up an education program for the Navy League. In preparing people for contact.
Yeah, I was doing the math in my head as you said all of that. I was getting ready to ask, okay, he's 92 now, so he would have retired, you know, let's pull round numbers, 62. So that's 30 years ago. So we're talking about 1984. When the reptilian sabotage was going on and the Nordics came in, was this in the 1970s? Was this in the 60s? Did he give any indication as to when this was going on?
Yes, he said it was throughout the 1950s and the 1960s. Both the anti-gravity technology programs,
right,
and the rocket propulsion programs were being sabotaged by these reptilian and Nazi assets that were embedded in all the major aerospace corporations. And Tompkins said that basically he had his work cut out, because he said that essentially what would happen would be that, as they were making breakthroughs at Douglas Air aircraft corporation with these anti-gravity technologies or advanced kind of rocket propulsion technologies for the Apollo program, because the Apollo program was going to be much more ambitious than what we have been led to believe, that these programs were all sabotaged by top engineers suddenly disappearing or being relocated
right.
out of advanced design into other areas. So they're all these various forms of sabotage. So it really was kind of this process was ongoing throughout the 50s and 60s. And Tompkins was very deeply involved in the Navy in the Apollo program that was actually, according to Tompkins, a secret Navy program that had four stages. And one of the stages was putting 10,000 personnel on five moon bases, that the Apollo program was really just the first stage, that the second stage of Apollo was to send these massive Nova rocket craft to the moon to begin building these Navy bases, so that eventually when the anti-gravity space battle fleets were completed in the 1980s, already have a presence on the moon and a presence on Mars using these giant Nova rocket ships that had 10 times the payload capability to the Saturn V rocket.
The sabotage you're referring to is interesting, because with everything that we, you know, sported out of Germany, you know, with the V2 program and, you know, bringing all of their technology over and Operation Paperclip, and we still, you know, the Soviets beat us to space, and we were being sabotaged from the inside. There's no question about that. We should have, you know, got everything done by 1955. And it just didn't happen. We were sabotaged from the very beginning with the German Nazi scientists. There's no question about that. And it's interesting how Tompkins confirms this, albeit a reptilian influence nonetheless, but a German reptilian influence. I find that very interesting. It's a fascinating point.
Yeah, well, it is. And again, this is another important correlating fact in terms of what it was that Corey Good has revealed, that Corey Good said that as a result of the Nazi and reptilian interaction or alliance, that they eventually set this dark fleet and that dark fleet became a very powerful space program that took off in the 1940s and 50s. Tompkins confirmed that. He said that was exactly what had happened. He didn't know of Corey Good, of course, while, you know, when he wrote his autobiography. And it was only when Robert Wood actually bought a copy of my book, Insiders Reveal Secret Space Programs, and showed it to Tompkins, that Tompkins said, "Oh, holy crap, you know, this is what I wrote about. This is what happened." That he was shocked that someone else had actually revealed this information, because as you probably know, in my book, I base it a lot around Corey Good's testimony and just kind of trace it back in terms of historical documents and other whistleblowers of what had happened. But the development of the Dark Fleet or the Nazi reptilian secret space program was something that Tompkins confirmed actually did happen.
There's one thing I want to talk about Corey for a second. When I talk about demeanor, and I talk about, you know, somebody's face and their eyes and so forth, Corey's been on this show a few times. David's been on the show many, many times. But I finally got to meet Corey in person. And the Corey that is on this show, right, I haven't met him yet. And the Corey and the guy that I met in person, two different people, in that he carries himself, I was just blown away by his integrity. I'm serious, too, Michael. I looked right at him and just went, wow. You know, Corey, it's an honor to meet you, and to because he, He was not what I expected. In fact, I don't even know what I expected, Michael, to be honest with you. But he's a man, you know, and he carries himself with dignity and respect. And I was blown away by that. Does he hit you the same way that he hit me?
Oh, exactly, yes. I mean, he's a truth teller. I mean, he is just revealing what he has directly experienced. And there's no agenda. I found no agenda.
Right.
What's refreshing about Corey is that he doesn't have any kind of overall perspective or agenda that he wants to sell, you know, that ETs are good or all they're demons or, you know, he's just revealing the facts and the experiences as that he directly has firsthand knowledge about. And he's not going into what other people have experienced, which is what I like about him as well, because this is one of the problems with that occasionally other whistleblowers get into, is that, you know, they begin to kind of lose that perspective of what it is that they've directly experienced,
right,
and what others have experienced. And I don't know if it's because it's kind of like the dreaded UFO disease. You want to stay relevant, and so you kind of like color your testimony with what others have said.
That's right.
But with Corey, it's like everything, he just talks about what he has directly experienced. And if he has an experience, that he doesn't talk about it. And I find that very refreshing. And yes, I think that his testimony really has opened the doors. Yeah, and I'll be honest. I mean, he really did change my life. I mean, up until the time I had come across Corey's testimony, I was pretty fixated on the idea that the UFO phenomenon really involved extraterrestrials, that was kind of like, 90% of UFO sightings involved extraterrestrials. Well, now I think that the majority of it actually involves these secret space programs, that the extraterrestrial element is a much smaller percentage of that.
Were you able to, with Tompkins, take all of the information that you have with Corey and other whistleblowers and start to cross-reference and start to verify some of the facts as you know it?
I'm just starting that process. I mean, this was my first interview with Tompkins, and basically it was to get to see his documents and get to copy them. And now I'm beginning the process of basically analyzing the documents and fact checking. You know, for example, that list of Navy officers, you know, I'm going to be calling these people and saying, well, you know, did you really experience this? You know, that's the process that now I'm undertaking. But it's going to be a process. It's going to take some time, but definitely cross-referencing what Tompkins has in his possession in terms of his documents, as well as what he's written in his book. And I've already begun that process. On my website, there's 4 articles at the moment where I talk about some of Tompkins' testimony as it is in his book, and reference that or cross-reference that with some of Corey Good's testimony, and it cross-references very well. And I think that one of the things that I found particularly fascinating was that Corey refers to these smart glass pads that he had access to from
right.
1987 to 2007,
right.
And that it had all of these intelligence briefings on what was going on in the secret space programs.
Right.
What I believe formed the core of that were the same Navy debriefings that William Tompkins heard from 1941 to 1945. That Tompkins debriefings, and we have to be clear about this, that Tompkins said that there were 28 Navy spies that were rotated in and out of the United States on a 6-month basis, and every time they would come, they would debrief for about, for several days, 4 or 5 days sometimes, and that every day he would listen to these debriefings and then disseminate the debriefings to various corporations. So this was going on. So there were we're talking about over 1,000 debriefings over the course of the Second World War that these Navy spies had shared with the U.S. Navy that formed the a large corpus of the Navy intelligence files on secret space programs, the Nazis' cooperation with the reptilians, and what had happened subsequently. And I think that those early Navy debriefings that William Tompkins sat in from 1941 to 1944 were included in the smart glass pads that Corey Good saw from 1987 to 2007. Mm-hmm. And so it's not surprising to me that their information correlates so well.
With and nobody knows documents better than Robert Wood. I think we can all say that, right, as a fact. These documents that you're talking about, and we're going to be up against a break, Michael, in 60 seconds. We can finish this on the back half. Does he have the originals? That's the first thing. And second, has Robert started to look at these and analyze them to get the provenance on them and to make sure that everything is on the up and up?
Well, yes, that process has begun. The thing is, Tompkins literally has hundreds of documents, and so this is something that Robert Wood is needing some help with in terms of following up on these documents. And so that's so I've begun collaborating with him in that regard,
right,
to kind of reference and fact check these documents. Because, you know, I mean, we're talking hundreds of documents, and, you know, Robert Wood is also helping William Tompkins with the editing of the second volume. So, and Robert Wood is also, you know, I mean, he's in his late 80s, and so clearly this is a long-term process, and he is trying to identify the key documents that Tompkins has that that is going to substantiate his testimony that there were these compartmentalized programs involving extraterrestrials and anti-gravity craft. And so...
Well, let me jump in. We just blew past the network break right there. We're going to pick this up in the back half. Do you want to take some phone calls, Michael?
Very happy to.
Okay. We'll open up the phone lines. 323-